Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally here with Sean Boyd, and so much happening not only behind the scenes, but in the sports world as well.
Man, well, yeah, if everybody could actually see what was going on behind the scenes here, our engineer, Doug Newsom, man, lighten it up. But, man, it's a great, great day. All around the West Coast, I can say, for with all the sunshine. And actually, the whole country, Sean Wally, is in a heat wave. And so I don't know about up in the Pacific Northwest, but down here, we are looking for shade, man. 102 degrees, and it's one of the cooler days in the past week.
Yeah, I saw a video, something about the weather on Facebook and how it's getting hot and summer is here. So it's definitely hot, even in the PNW.
Well, you know, this is an election year and we have our politicians that are vying to make their voices heard. And on the West Coast, it is a definite, definite global warming. And so I think we should take heed, man, because this is one of the hotter summer months, actually hotter years that I've experienced.
So what do you do to prevent yourself from being taken by the heat? Do you just stay indoors, blast the AC? Do you jump in a ice bath? What do you do?
All of the above. Any way that you can stay cool, you do it, man. But you're not catching me outside. There's no way in the world. I mean, you know, down here in Northern California, there aren't too many trees. So, you know, at least in this part of Northern California. So, yeah, you definitely stay inside. Keep the air conditioned going. Across your fingers that your electric bill doesn't run through the roof. But 9 times out of 10, it's too late. So, you know that. Yeah, you just have to keep cool, man.
So, Sean, one of the better days yesterday in Seattle sports history, as arguably the biggest name in the biggest name in Mariner history, arguably the biggest name in Seattle sports history, is now in the Hall of Fame, and that is one Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah, great day for Pacific Northwest baseball, Seattle Mariners to be exact. Ken Griffey Jr. getting inducted in Cooperstown, and the two big names in that induction, of course, the beloved Ken Griffey Jr. and Mike Piazza. But yeah, Ken Griffey stole the show, man. I mean, we were talking about this last week and the week before on the great things that, or, you know, some of the memories that we have seen as far as Ken Griffey Jr. is concerned. And, man, you can go over thousands of them. But one of the things I do remember, and that ESPN did a great job in showing over and over again as far as his great play. Of course, you know, he had great defense out in center field. But, man, what a sweet swing. And when that ball came over the plate, and sometimes it was low and outside, and he could still put it out the park, man, that was one of the better swings, if not the best swing ever in Major League Baseball.
You know, I was telling this morning, hearing an interview with one Joe Buck of Fox Sports, and he was on a Seattle radio station, and they asked him, what are your Griffey memories? And, of course, he said the same thing about the smile and how sweet that swing was and what a gifted athlete he was. And you know what? I will finish this story later on in the show, because we need to go out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in big time guest number one. And that is Joyce Ekweremadu. Joyce, thanks for your time tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Joyce, it's such a pleasure to have you on. And of course, the three of us getting the chance to work together over the past year, for me the past year, and of course you and Sean a year and a half to 2 years, but mm-hmm. A great and phenomenal basketball player. What's going on these days with you?
Hey man, I've just been doing a lot of motivational speaking, community outreach. I'm out in LA right now, so I just had an audition with Adidas on Saturday, so just really trying to get out there, get my name out there, showcase these skills. And, you know, they call me Miss J now because of you got to respect my jump shot. So that's what I tell people. And usually when I tell them that, they start laughing. But it's real. It's real life. So,
see, well, yes,
what I'm doing pretty much right now.
Well, good, good. You know, I know that lots of people, millions of people got the chance to see you as you traveled around the world. And, of course, I've gotten a chance to see that, Jay, as well. And, yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's one of the nicest jump shots that you'll ever see. Now, of course, your last name is Unique Ekweremadu. And I believe that is Nigerian. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's totally right. Totally Nigerian. Both of my parents are from Nigeria, born and raised. I actually was born in Oklahoma. So coming from Oklahoma with that last name, I don't know how that that matches up. But, you know, speaking of Nigerian, I just finished playing with the national team of Nigeria. And we just try to do our second chance qualifying tournament for the Olympics. And it was a great experience. We were ranked 42 in the world, and we had to play in a pool with Belarus, who was ranked 10th in the world, and Korea, who was ranked 12th. And Korea, who basically is a female version of the Golden State Warriors, they actually set a FIBA record on us with most threes made in a game with 14. But we ended up beating them by 1 point. So that was exciting to watch on defense. Every time the shot goes up, it just goes through. So it was a very great experience for us. We wish we could have gone forward and gone to the Olympics, but it was a deal where they had to do a point spread, and we ended up losing to Belarus by 11. So we got knocked out, even though everybody won one and lost one. So Belarus is headed to the Olympics now, which is coming up shortly.
Joyce, what did you learn most from that experience playing for the national team of Nigeria?
Definitely patience. I've been playing for the team since 2007. I was a senior in college, and actually, if I hadn't have played on that team right going into my senior year of college, I never would have gotten to the next level, which was the WNBA, because it taught me a lot about the potential that I had. I had to be a point guard for a team being when at the time I was 20, 21, on a team that was full of veterans, that girls that who did play in the WNBA and played at prestigious schools like Stanford, UCLA, big time, you know, Division I schools, and I had to direct the team. So definitely had to learn patience, because nothing has really gone the way that we planned it. Obviously, every year we want to go to the Olympics or we want to win the African Olympics. But it just hasn't turned out that way. But I can see that we're growing, definitely. Beating the number 12 team in the world, that was something that we could put under our belt. That was the first team, non-African team that I've beaten being on the team. So it was great. It was a great experience in France. Totally, I learned a lot from my first coach, who was Kevin Cook. He was the assistant coach for the Houston Comets back when they won the 4 championships. So he pretty much took me under his wing, and another girl, Oleen Kasani, who she won a championship with Detroit Shock. And we just learned a lot from the team, a lot from him, and just so much fun, you know, representing a country full of 180 million people, where your family, you know, and your ancestry date back to. So it's always exciting.
Joyce, do you feel any extra added pressure when you are playing for a country and you've got that country's name on that jersey?
Yeah, totally. There's a ton of pressure because, you know, everybody in Nigeria is a huge sports fan. So whatever, soccer number one, and then I would say basketball, track number two. So everything that we're doing is like broadcast. And of course, coming from the States as well, the majority of our team is pretty much like me. Both of our parents were born in Nigeria, but we were American born. So there's a lot of pressure with that as well, because, you know, there's a lot of expectations. So when we don't reach the goal, it's kind of like we probably shoot ourselves or harder on ourselves than more so than the fans are. But, you know, you could just sense a feel of disappointment. But there is still that encouragement. And like I said, coming from this last tournament, we are definitely headed in the right direction, because just even making it to the tournament and beating an Asian team, and then hanging in close to a European team, it's something that none of the teams in Africa can ever say they've done. So We're definitely moving in the right direction.
Joyce Ekweremadu, professional basketball player, Miss J, if you're nasty, joining us here on the double. And now, Miss J, of course, you mentioned playing in Poland and in Italy. Now, being a professional basketball player, are you looking at the WNBA? Any teams looking at you right now? Inside scoop.
Well, I played for San Antonio Silver Stars in 2008, and so I was there for a month. I have a great relationship with them. I live in Dallas right now, and I go to quite a few Dallas Wings games, and some people are like, man, you need to get back out there. But, you know, being 30 years old now, I'm just like, man, I have to dust off these knees and get back into like that kind of shape, basically. But I wouldn't put it past me. I mean, if that's supposed to happen, I think it will happen. I can always get in shape. I've stayed in shape from the national team, and it's just a question about getting that opportunity, I guess. I think I'm surpassed the level of trying to get into any development leagues or playing overseas again. I really enjoyed, playing with the Globetrotters, and then now using those tools that I learned from that into going into my motivational speaking. I'm just excited for the next chapter now, and getting. I may partner with the NBA and WNBA. That's in the works right now, and just doing some community initiatives. And helping out with their NBA Cares program. So that's, I believe, the next step for me. Anything I could do that, you know, God's given me the talent to play, so I just got to shine the light out there to other people and inspire other people to do the same.
Now, Ms. J, you had mentioned motivational speaking, and, of course, the WNBA has taken some real tough stances here over the past few weeks. One in particular being the Black Lives Matters, and there have been a few teams that have protested. Now, as a positive motivational, as a motivational speaker, what would you use your platform as far as getting the word out to people about you being united?
Well, definitely, I agree with some of what the WNBA players are doing right now. They're using their platform to. Really shine light on an issue that's going on right now. And, you know, the NBA has done the same, and there wasn't this big of an ordeal about that with the NBA. So, and actually some of my friends are the ones doing it. Tina Charles, not just to mention one, that she's taken a big stand. And so for me personally, I speak on topics such as bullying prevention. I speak about when I was actually bullied when I was a child, back when I was about 5 years old. And you really, when I talk about it, like, you could just see the kids really getting engaged, and I use the basketball as a platform to do that. It's an important message, definitely, that I'm giving to them, but I also make it fun in a sense where it's very interactive, and we do use a basketball to kind of relate the topics called the ABCs of bullying prevention. I also speak about female empowerment. Right now, I think that's huge. You got, Becky Hammon, who I played with. She's, one of the coaches for the Spurs. And so, and Nancy Lieberman, who I'm good friends with as well, one of the coaches for the Sacramento Kings. So females are really doing it right now. And we got to just carry that message on to these younger girls who feel like, they can't amount to anything that maybe a guy can or a boy can or a man can. Just in any industry, and even with the Globetrotters, that was a male-dominated industry, and yet, I was able to thrive within it. So I definitely think using your platform to deliver a message is something that I think is very important for every athlete and anybody that's even in the entertainment world. I think that's why you're given that gift, is you're given that gift for a purpose.
Now, Joyce, what do you try to relay to those kids, and what do you say when you've got hundreds or thousands in front of you that, maybe they need that extra little push to believe themselves that they can do whatever they want?
Well, one of my taglines is embrace adversity, just because I tell kids, nothing in life ever goes the way that you planned it. Maybe even looking forward to tomorrow, nothing may go the way that you planned it for tomorrow, how much more years down the road. So learning to embrace that moment, whether it's a challenge, whether you were cut from a team, which I can relate to, which didn't happen to me till later on in life, whether you didn't get a good grade on something, or maybe, you know, whoever you want to talk to rejected you, whatever the case may be. Somebody rejected your business idea. You've got to embrace, and you can't just stop at that moment. Everything is a challenge, and what you do is you got to take each failing moment as a learning lesson, a learning moment. I don't even like to use the word fail. I feel like failure is your first attempt at success, or second or third or fourth or however many times it takes you. But if you just continue to be confident and have that faith that you are going to be successful, then you are going to be successful, and that's all it takes. And just using those little hurdles to push forward and never giving up and continuously working hard and striving for that moment.
Now, Joyce, where do you think you have got that great gift on the microphone and for public speaking? You know, I've seen you speak in front of thousands and you do a phenomenal job. So is that a lot of practice mixed in with a sprinkle of I was gifted with it, a combination of both?
Well, you know what? Public speaking has always been a fear, and it still is. I get really anxious, palms sweaty before I go up and speak. But once you get up there, it kind of feels natural. I can't look at it as I'm talking to thousands of people. I feel like I have to look at it like I'm having a conversation with one person. So once I kind of psych my mind into doing that, then it just becomes something that just flows. And obviously, the more that I do it, the more comfortable I feel when I'm actually out there. It still doesn't take away that anxiety prior to speaking, but once I get out there, once I get on the mic, I just got to know that, hey, even if I mess up, I mean, who hasn't messed up before in life, you know? And I don't think I'm going to mess up just that bad where I, like, go viral or something. And even so, even if you do go viral, like, people forget about things in a span of 24 hours anyway. So I think with that whole combination of all that, it just makes it a little bit easier to speak in front of people.
Joyce Equiromato joining us here on The Double. Now, Joyce, do you do your own speeches, or who puts together the platform for you?
I learned a lot from the Globetrotters. And when we do talk about bullying prevention and just like what works well with kids and youth. And so I've actually used those guidelines and kind of like the same format and just been able to talk about various topics using the same format. So once I got that format and was able to implement basketball into the speeches, it made me more comfortable, obviously, because I'm a basketball player. And it made it just interactive. I did a ABCs of Becoming a New Teacher last summer for a new teacher academy at a school district. And now we're using adults who are old, like some maybe my age, some maybe 20 years older than me, but the same format that I use for youth worked out perfectly with the adults. In fact, they were even more excited than the kids. And so I would use that same format and just tailor every topic to my audience. I definitely have to write it down before I even start talking about it. I write it down, practice it, and make sure everything makes sense, for one, because I love to go on a tangent, and then for two, that it just flows and, you know, it can relate to the audience. And so once I do that, write it down, practice it once or twice, then I'm good to go. Once I'm on that stage, it usually works out. And it, you know how it is, like once you get to that moment, it kind of doesn't go exactly the way you wrote it out, but it makes sense and it flows and everybody has a good time. So we keep it like that as such.
Now, Joyce, I know just listening to you talk, it sounds like it's a tremendous passion, something that you really take to heart as far as making a difference.
Oh, yeah, it definitely is. I feel like you are wasting your gift if you are not relaying it to others. So if I just kept all this knowledge and experience to myself, well, what good is that going to do, you know? So there are so many kids, especially youth, girls, boys, like even when I was playing, that have come up to me and said, you know, you're such an inspiration. I never, not one day did I wake up think that I was an inspiration. Still to this day, I think it's crazy that people tell me that because I'm just doing what I love to do. I started playing at 10 years old, started playing against guys, and fast forward to 19 years later, that's what I was doing for a career. So, and that's what I still am doing, playing at the rec centers, playing outside, playing overseas, playing, you know, all over the place, all over the world. basketball has taken me. And so I just use those experiences and try to relate it to other people and make sure that they're becoming great or using that to make them fully, like, take them to their full potential. Because we never want anybody to not reach their full potential.
Joyce, throughout your career, who have been people that have taken you under their wing and people you have looked up to help you get to this point?
Definitely my parents, because the older I got, and when I was playing overseas in Poland and Italy, I was like, man, I have to stay over in this foreign country for, 5 to 7 months at a time. And then I think back and look at my parents. My dad came, to the U.S. and he was like 18 years old, just up and moved and came here with like a few $100s and didn't know, anybody. And he now, years and years later, is a successful man. So looking at him and his story and how he just pretty much had a dream and just went for it, that's very inspiring. Even my mom as well, because she had to do the same thing. I'm sure her parents were like, no, you're not going to go, to the U.S. and marry some man and just start living over there. I'm sure they were totally against that. But the fact that she did, and she too is also successful. She's a registered nurse. And just seeing their story definitely inspires me. I'm like, wow, I was born and raised in America, and there's so much opportunity here and so many ways to network. There's no reason why I shouldn't be successful, and especially using the talent that God's given me to do that.
All right, Joyce, what is harder, playing around the world, playing basketball in front of thousands, or auditioning for a commercial?
Well, I think that the audition for the commercial was harder because it was just me. And the client is kind of intimidating a little bit. And then there's other girls like looking at you like, oh, like sizing you up. And then I'm sizing other girls up. But I think the main thing that I got to remember is just being confident, and knowing obviously with basketball auditions, I'm like, okay, that's what I do. So I shouldn't be nervous with this. But I think definitely that I would say this last Saturday, this audition, and then I can compare that to my very first Globetrotter game in which I played in front of 10,000 people. That was nerve-wracking. And my very first WNBA game playing in front of a few thousand. That one more probably the most out of all, because it was a dream that I had at 10 years old, and then just kind of realizing that it was coming into fruition freaked me out. And so when I went out there, first play down, I get ripped and I'm like, awesome. And then like all I hear is, come on, rookie, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, this feels like a movie. Like, so I had to like snap out of the daze and then just remember that it was just basketball, like not to overthink it. So I would say those three moments. So this last Saturday, the first Globetrotter game, my first WNBA game, probably were the most nerve-wracking moments of my life.
Now, Joyce, being a resident of the Dallas area, I've got to ask, how are things now with the unfortunate events in the past week and a half, and how are tensions and how has the community responded?
Dude, it was so unreal when that was happening, just because Dallas isn't an area where stuff like that happened. You always see it, overseas in different countries or like bigger cities. Dallas is a pretty big city, but like maybe more liberal cities like New York or something like that. But like for me, when it was happening, I actually was on my way to my mother's house, who lives further away from downtown than I do. I live like 10 minutes away from downtown, so it was so close to home. But it was just unreal, when that was happening, just because when everybody was protesting, we were all one with the Dallas police. Everybody was holding hands. Everybody was cool, talking. Like, there's never been a the police versus the people type feeling in Dallas ever. Maybe more so in the suburb areas, a little bit more so. But even at that point, still not as much as you may see other parts of the nation. And so now I feel like tensions are down. I don't think, anything is different, like as far as like how we view the police or anything like that. I feel like we're all just trying to be one, one human race and just live in peace. And I feel that feeling when I'm in Dallas.
Well, that's good to hear that hopefully things are getting back to normal and the positive in the community will shine through.
Yes, yes.
Definitely. Yeah. That we don't want any problems in Dallas. We just want to eat ribs and barbecue. That's all we want to
do. Amen to that. Joyce, thank you so much for your time tonight. Everybody go follow Joyce at Miss Joyce 22 on Twitter. Check out her website, imissj.com. Joyce, appreciate getting to know you over the last year and a half, 2 years. Thank you so much for your help and insight tonight.
No problem. There you go, Wally. Take care. Thanks for having me.
There goes Joyce Ekweremadu, a fabulous basketball player, and Sean, an even better person.
Oh, man, most definitely. And of course, I had a short, brief stint to work with Joyce and, you know, in my trainings before I went out on my tour. And so, you know, the short time that we spent together, I mean, I could tell right off the bat that that's somebody that really cares and has a passion to do things in the community and do great things both on and off the basketball court.
There is no doubt that Sweet J has the right mindset for not only sports but life, and she's attacking it.
Yeah, and so, you know, again, as you had mentioned, you know, follow her on Twitter at Miss Joyce 22 and see some of the goings on that she is doing, and you know, if there's a way that you can support or help, you know, feel free to do that as well. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we are going to have guest number two here on the double. That is assistant coach Rachi Wortham of the University of Montana. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it.
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds. And since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away. And I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express, Sean Wally and Sean Boyd.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally here with Sean Boyd. And let's go back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in big time guest number two. And that is none other than assistant men's basketball coach at the University of Montana, Rachi Wortham. Rachi, thanks for your time tonight.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, Rasheed, this is a treat for me having you here on the show. And of course, you know, for those of our listeners who know the both of us back in the 253, man, because that is where we are from. Man, you're doing some great things. And of course, you know, being at Eastern Washington like myself and being a part of probably the best fraternity in the world, Kappa Alpha Psi, the sweet Kappa Pi chapter. Man,
yes,
thanks
sir.
For being on, brother. Thanks for being on.
Absolutely. I'm telling you, it's an honor.
Now, Rasheed, last year you were at Oregon State, coaching at Oregon State, and now at the University of Montana. Of course, being an assistant coach, you can't really stake your flag for too long, but tell us about the transition and how things are going over there at the University of Montana.
It's going good. It's easier for me probably because the guys on staff are the guys I really hang out with in life. When you go down to the Final Four, you kind of have your crew of guys you hang out with, and these are the guys I typically hang out with at the Final Four. So Travis has been my mentor since I was a boy. He coached me in AAU, and one day I told him I was going to be a basketball coach one day, and he said the same. So I said maybe one day we'll work together, and sure enough, it's come to be.
Now, isn't that something? You have a vision in place, and of course you've come from the humble beginnings and playing at Foss High School in Tacoma, and then playing basketball at TCC, then going on to Eastern Washington. Now, it's not every day that you get the chance to actually coach at the places that you actually played. So how was that feeling?
It was really good for me at Eastern Washington because I felt like it was in a perfect storm. When I was doing my master's work, the new coach came in, and he saw me running camps and saw me kind of being a leader, and he needed a guy on his staff that was young and could relate to the players, and he saw my passion for the game. So when he came in, he didn't know me from Adam. He just saw me work these camps and offered me an opportunity. It was great because I already knew Eastern Washington, I already knew the state of Washington, and he wanted recruits from the state of Washington, so it was kind of perfect harmony.
So, Coach, it sounds like it was a great opportunity and just a great everything came to fruition at the right time for you there at that camp.
Timing. I think the world is about timing and relationships. And it was crazy about how I got in. I literally called Jay John at Oregon State University and told him I'd work his camps for free. I did that when I was a grad student. I went and worked his camps for free. And then when this job came open, Jay John knew Kirk Earlywine. And Jay John gave Kirk a phone call for me. So it was crazy how it worked out. I just was kind of reaching out. I had worked in Gonzaga's camp, worked a few other little camps in the area, and that relationship blossomed into a job.
When you look back at what you have done, how you called those schools and said, I will work these camps for free, and now look at how things have grown and things have come to fruition for you, how do you relay that to your players today?
I always got a friend who says, opportunities don't go away, they go to somebody else. And that always kind of sticks in the back of my mind. I tell the guys, man, be great where you're at. I always say, be great, be great, be great. Work on being great. And in my mind, I was kind of a young dude, and I said, I want to be the greatest coach I know. And this was high school. Literally, I used to say that in middle school because we went to a Young Life camp in seventh grade, and they said, what do you want to be? Everybody wanted to be in the NBA. I was like, I want to be a college basketball coach, and I want to be the best one that I know. And people kind of laughed at it. And for me, in the back of my mind, I was serious as heck. But I kind of laugh with the group, like, yeah, okay, I'm going to show you guys. Literally, that's been my mentality since I was in seventh grade.
Coach Rasheed Wortham joining us here on the double. And now, Coach, you have the honor of actually spotting talent and finding talent. Obviously, this is something that you've been doing for a while, as you had mentioned, you know, being on the AAU circuit and then being a coach and wanting to be the best coach. Kind of give us an idea on what it's like to try to spot great talent. You're in Vegas just this past weekend, and you know what is it like going through that process?
Well, it's a bunch of different things that go into it, but first you got to understand what the head coach wants. You can think a guy is incredible and he doesn't fit what the head coach wants. So once you understand those parameters, then you can kind of go search. But the thing that I look at is how hard a guy plays and what a teammate he is. If you can help your team win, you're a good teammate. If you're lacking emotional support from your teammates, then you're probably not a good teammate. If they're not really trying to big you up like you're doing them, then you're probably not a great teammate. The last thing is when you're out there, are you really being selfish, or are you really taking the ball to the rim because you know that's going to help your team to win? Everybody wants to score. I think that's the biggest thing that these kids think they need to do to get a scholarship, and that's not necessarily true. There's so many more things. Literally, University of Montana has the player of the game every game. It's not the person who scores the most points. We were talking about that when I first came in. I said, what do you guys do to kind of set yourself apart? And they said, well, every single game we have player of the game in the locker room, and that person is truly not the person who had the best game. It's that person who does something outside of the box. So if Coach DeCure wants that from our players, then I need to go look at that when I'm scouting these kids.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, of course, you know, when I coached basketball at the high school level, we had a hustle chart. And, you know, those we tallied up points for the things that were outside of actual points. And, because those are the keys to winning basketball games. And, you know, for you out there, to, you know, trying to find the talent, talk to me a little bit about the character, because in this day and age, you know, it just seems like, you know, character goes out the window sometimes. Sometimes we see a lot of NBA players, they're a little off the cuff. But at the collegiate level, there has to be that level of strong character. I'm sure Coach DeCure has that same creed for his basketball team.
He does. And when people say that, they want to mean it, and they don't always live by it. But Coach DeCure said when he first got in here, I guess, I wasn't here, so I was at Oregon State at that time. But he told me that we're going to get a 3.0 GPA here at Montana. And sure enough, this quarter, the whole CUME GPA was like 3.07, and the quarter GPA was 3.12. So the wow. whole team has above a 3.0 CUME. So that's big time if you talk about being students first and then athletes second. He's really truly believing that. The second piece is he wants guys that are involved in the community. A lot of coaches say it, and a lot of players say, oh, yeah, we do some community service, but talking about doing 300 hours of community service and really living in the community, supporting the people that support you every day.
Coach, who have been people throughout your life, whether it be when you were playing in AAU and high school, or now that you're in the coaching realm, that have helped you and molded you and helped lead you to where you're at today?
Well, my family first, then coaches, literally. My dad left when I was like 9 years old. We didn't talk to him for years, literally. And he moved to Alabama, and he was gone. So in my neighborhood was really, really gang-infested. My block was probably the most gang-infested block. I lived on a busy street, which is 19th Street, and off of 19th, there was a street L, and L had the community center that was on our street, so a lot of people in the Northwest played at People's Community Center, and it was kind of a famous basketball place in Tacoma, but I don't know, like early 90s, maybe 93 or 94, I can't remember the exact date. The National Guard blocked it off because there were too many drive-bys. So for me, my focus was being able to leave my neighborhood and then be able to go back and help. The Boys and Girls Club coaches were instrumental. The community center coaches were instrumental. And then the Young Life people were huge in my life beyond my family.
Now, Coach, you've bounced around, obviously, from colleges to, of course, you coached at Oregon State. Now you're assistant coaching at Montana. Why should a player take a look at becoming a Grizzly and getting what we're talking about, all of this being great in the community, great with your grades, and great on the court?
There's a few different things. I think the University of Montana and Missoula itself, they understand success and what success looks like and what success should feel like. So they're not just helping you win on the basketball court or on the football field or in soccer field. They're teaching you how to be successful long term. And when you put those values into kids and they come together, then you'll have a team that's going to be successful on and off the court. It's simple. It's simple when you say, okay, I'm going to make these guys go to community and do community service. You do that, that's great. But then you teach them what you want them to know. You teach them what you want them to teach the people around them. You teach them what you want them to know on the basketball court. Yeah, we know you got talent, but this is how I want you guys to assimilate. Now, this is where I want you to score from. This is how I want this person to score. Or we're going to get this rebound. We're going to outlet it. And those are simple schemes that coaches put together. But if you think about the coaches that have been here, they've been extremely successful because of the people that they are. They hire great people here. And when you put a great leader in front of a group of kids, they're going to want to follow that person.
Man, that's a fantastic blueprint. Coach Rashi Wortham, assistant basketball, men's basketball coach at the University of Montana, joining us here on the double. Now, Rashi, you were talking about your humble beginnings at, you know, playing at the People Center at the Hilltop. And, you know, I remember those days. And I mean, you're not a basketball player unless you've gotten to play at People Center and the Hilltop. And so, you know, some great talent has come out of there. Where do you see yourself, you know, from that, from where you began? Where do you see yourself in the next 2 to 5 years as far as coaching is concerned? Are there NBA aspirations as far as coaching?
I always say it's not up to me. I'm a Christian first. And any social media I have, they'll see it. I'm a Christian first. And so wherever God takes me, that's where I'm going to go. I don't want to be in the NBA because I feel like those guys don't necessarily play for the love of the game sometimes. I feel like some of them are playing for a check. And it is what it is. It's not a bad thing necessarily, but I just don't. I can't see myself right now in that light. I'm a competitor. If you're not competing to win, you're only competing for yourself, then I can't be part of your team. And when you talk about being out there with five guys and being in one accord, it's beautiful. You watch guys play basketball and they're able to shut somebody down, and then every time down the court score on somebody, it's amazing. And I don't really feel like the NBA is like that. As far as the way I see myself from where I'm from, I'm a product of my environment. And when I say that, people are like, well, if you're a product of your environment, you should have been a gang member. No, no, no. There are gang members and there are success stories. And at the end of the day, those are still my friends. Before they were in the gangs, a lot of those dudes were my friends. So today they're my friends, and we may not do the same thing. We may not have the same morals, same values, but those are my guys. I'm not going to go necessarily always go hang out with them and do what they do. But when I see them, it's going to be all good, and hey, how you doing? And hopefully they understand that I know I'm a product of the environment, and I love the Hilltop, and I would love to do some more outreach. And I told a lot of these kids back home, if you need my number, reach out to the guys in the community because they have it. Anybody in basketball can get in contact with me in Tacoma. And I tell them like this, call me. I'll be a resource.
Man, that's a strong foundation, Coach Wertherman. You know, you'd mentioned earlier – as we were talking, you know, some of the things that made you who you were from the beginning. And you'd mentioned Young Life. And, of course, you know, I had some real good friends involved in Young Life, which I know that you were a part of as far as Pastor Pritchard. The Pritchard family does some great things in Young Life. Talk to us a little bit about what that program did for you and how it can make a difference for others as well.
Well, first, the crazy part about this Young Life, I never heard of Young Life until probably sixth grade. And a guy named Dave Hillis, who was the president of Northwest Leadership Foundation, his son played with me, and they had Bible study, basically. But I'm like, man, I'm not trying to do Bible study. What they did was incorporate basketball. What they didn't study, we'd study 5 or 10 minutes to understand the Lord. And I grew up with in the church, so it was not a big deal for me. But in the community, guys like, man, I don't want to hear that. But if you incorporate the basketball, we'll do 10 minutes studying this Bible, and then we can play basketball, guys would dig in. The next thing was there was a guy named Chad Davidson who was at Washington State University, and he was actually the Cougar. He literally was the Cougar dancing, doing that. He came back and had a story to tell us. We didn't know him. He's from Enumclaw, Washington, but he was with the Young Life group, and those people, he was kind of doing his outreach and said, I want to do outreach. And they sent him to the community center and talked to about 60 of our kids. So he talked to us, and we're like, okay, whatever, great guy. He means well. The very next weekend was a Friday. He had this Young Life van. He was literally driving around the community saying, hey, come in, get in the van with me. We're going to go do Young Life. And we're like, whoa. And we literally jumped in the van and we did Young Life. So he mentored us. We got to go on so many trips, which was we couldn't afford. Free trips, going to California, Woodleaf, and going to Double K in Portland, and things that instill different values because they held us accountable. We were kind of roughneck kids and just kind of who we were, but we didn't get to talk crazy. You better say yes, and you better look people in the eye, and you better shake their hands. And so they instilled a lot of different values we didn't really think about when we were young. And now there's about 4 or 5 of us that still talk to Chad, and he's actually writing a book right now about how we grew up.
Basketball coach Rashi Wertham with us here on the double. And, Coach, growing up on the Hilltop, I'm sure you know people that chose the wrong path. They made the wrong choice, and their life is now defined by that. Do you ever think back of, hey, that could have been me. I could have been in that situation, but because I made proper choices, I am now mm-hmm. in the place I'm at, which is positive and right.
Yeah, definitely. I have the reason I am here is because of those people, because of the guys I grew up with that decided they were going to do the things that they wanted to do. I saw it ahead of me. There was also two gang members, older guys, probably like maybe 12, 13, that, and they were probably 35, 30, 35, 28, in between there somewhere, and they were like, you know what, you don't need to be a gang member. Keep that ball in your hand, just keep staying focused, literally. And I remember to this day, they both know, I told them I appreciate that, and they didn't even remember saying that to me. But I appreciated that because these were two guys that had clout in the neighborhood too. They had, if they told somebody to do something, they did it. And so for me, for them to look at me and say, man, this ain't for you. I need you to stay focused. I need you to go to college. And they always said, I need you to go to the NBA. And they didn't know what my focus was, but that was huge. And to this day, I got respect for those guys for that. And when I go home, not just those guys, but other guys got respect for me. They always tell me, man, keep doing what you're doing. I appreciate it. I love watching you on social media. I love seeing your positivity. So it's big.
What do you take away from being able to talk to the youth today that are in high school that are great basketball players and maybe they're on the fence of whether or not they're living the right life, but yet here you are to be able to talk to them and preach from, hey, I've been there, I've done that, let me help you?
First and foremost, I always tell them life's about relationships, and the relationship you surround yourself with can either drag you down or push you forward. So you got to think about what you're doing. Okay, well, you want to be successful. What does success look like? Have you ever truly seen success in your eyes? Everybody's definition of success is different. But I tell them, I've seen the slum. I've seen the neighborhood where you can't get any worse. So when you guys talk about, or these kids talk about how tough their neighborhood is, I get it. It may be worse than how I grew up. But it's all relative to what you know. There's other people that ask me, how come you guys didn't move? We didn't have no opportunities to move. We didn't have nothing. My mom had nothing, but she worked to help us be successful and go off to college. All four of us went to college and got degrees. So when I tell these kids my story and tell them that there's possibility, regardless to what happens, what situation you've been through, you can get beyond it and have success.
Now, Coach Wortham, one of the great things that people are getting to know about you here on The Double, but one of the things that I know mm-hmm. personally is not only do mm-hmm. you teach it outside of the house, you actually teach this inside of the house. Man, your son, I tell you, you know, I am so proud of you and the things that you're doing. And this young man is smart beyond belief. And not only that, he's got a nice jump shot already. And I mean, what is he, 3 years old?
He's four now.
He looks the part, man. And, man, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of the things that you do.
Appreciate
teaching
that.
It inside the home and then bringing it out.
And that's not the only thing. Inside the home, the jumper's great, but you better learn how to be great academically.
Yeah, you know, and again, you've set some strong foundations. And as a result, man, you're truly blessed. You know, the house on the lake, When I grow up, Coach, I'm going to be just like you. That house on the lake.
I got a great wife. Just know that. I got in-laws. I got great family. So it's all encompassing.
Oh, man. And again, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of everything that you're doing, brother.
Man, I appreciate that. And from coming from somebody who's known me, that's big.
Well, Sean, what lake are we talking? American or?
Oh, you know about this stuff, huh?
Yeah. Hey. Hey, I'm from the 360 originally, which was the old 206,
it.
You know, Olympia Lacey.
I
lived in Tacoma and University Place, so absolutely. I know the 253 right well.
On. So we're in Geek Harbor off of Sylvia Lake, a little small lake. It's wonderful, though. It's what we call home, so it's beautiful.
There we go. Assistant basketball coach for the Montana Grizzlies, Rasheed Wortham.
Yes,
you can follow him on Twitter at Coach with a K, KOACHRW mm-hmm. on Twitter. Rasheed Wortham, thank you so much for your time, your insight. Keep doing great things. You're an inspiration to many.
That is
appreciate
true.
It. Thanks so much again. Anytime, guys.
All right.
All right. Thanks for your time.
There goes Rasheed Wortham, doing great things now for the Grizzlies of Montana, which, Sean Boyd, we talked about it over a year ago. My first experience in the state of Montana, big sky country, and it definitely is beautiful. Mountains, rivers, lakes, you name it. I went to the University of Montana for sure, and I can tell you they have good facilities. There's no reason they can't win games, and we know Coach Wortham is going to help direct that program in the right place.
Yeah, you know, the best kept secret in the Big Sky Conference, I believe, is the University of Montana. And that's coming from somebody who went to Eastern Washington, who I love my Eagles. But I remember going to the University of Montana, and what a beautiful campus. Great facilities, great education. And as you were mentioning, just beautiful scenery all around. Lots of lakes, beautiful landscape. And man, the University of Montana football team is actually their professional team. So you're talking about the whole area that collapses on that stadium to watch football. I mean, it's intimidating if you're one of the visiting teams. So yeah, Big Sky Country, Montana, great place to be.
Mountains built, you know, almost like the stadium built into the mountains. But hey, we're not here to talk football because Coach Wortham coaches basketball.
That's right.
And I was at that arena. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that arena, their weight room, their locker rooms. And like I said, no reason they cannot be a program that is doing great things moving forward.
Yeah, you know, I believe that they will. And, you know, we were talking offline. Coach and I were talking a little offline before coming on the air here. And, you know, just mentioning the other teams in the Big Sky. This is a conference that is getting better and better each year by leaps and bounds. I mean, you're talking about an Eastern Washington team that made it to the tournament a couple of years ago, the University of Montana. Sac State is on the rise as well. And so you're going to see some great competition coming up in the Big Sky, you know, with those teams. And, you know, it's just a matter of time before they're consistently putting a dent and getting wins in the tournament. So, yep, hats off to Coach Wortham and the things that he's doing over there, and just wishing him continued success.
You know, Sean, it's amazing how our circle of influence, circle of friends, circle of acquaintances throughout the last 11 years that we've known each other. You think about Tacoma, a place you know better than I know pretty darn well, yet look at all the guests we've had on our show that know each other. Talking about Coach Wortham tonight with, you know, Coach Mosley. You've got Chris Hippa, Dante Harris. I'm sure all those guys intertwine, and they're all doing great things out of the 253.
Well, as a matter of fact, you mentioned Coach Mosley. That was actually Coach Wortham's coach when he was when he played at TCC for a brief stint. And so, yeah, man, all of the guys from Tacoma, we know each other. We know what every, you know, the struggle on, you know, trying to make it out. And, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy. But when you have success stories like Coach Wortham's and the previous guests that you had mentioned that we've had here on the double, it gives you a sense of pride and understanding that, you know, there are some great things if you put your mind to it and if you stay focused. Because that's one of the things that I really caught from Coach Wortham, is just having your dream, having your vision, and don't let anybody deter you or steer you off of that path. And if you do that, and if you stay consistent, then you will have success. And so it's great to have Coach Wortham on the show.
And even though you go from a Pac-12 school to a Big Sky school, not a huge difference, not necessarily a drop-off. You still have great facilities. You still have the same opportunities to offer these young student-athletes at the high school level and a chance for them to sprout, grow their own roots, and do great things, whether it be in Corvallis or now as a Montana Grizzly.
Yeah, I don't think there's a drop-off at all. I think it's all in the person. It's all in the coach. You know, what they can do as far as their influence is concerned to get that young student athlete to come to their institution. When you're, you know, a lot of the times when we see these games, NCAA games, you know, you see a lot of the 1A schools playing 1AA schools, and they are, you know, tough contests. And so, yeah, there's not that much of a drop-off. It's just understanding and how can you influence that athlete to come to your school.
All right, Sean, we're almost to it this next weekend. So before our next show, NFL training camps open, starting with what they call so-called Title Town. The Green Bay Packers are the first team to hold training camp, followed by the rest of the NFL, including your Oakland Raiders and my Seattle Seahawks.
Man, you know, with all the upside as far as the Oakland Raiders in the offseason, the great draft picks that they have had over the past few years, the cohesion that has come about from those picks, and the solid team that has been built. This past week, there's been a little blip on the radar. I don't know if you've heard, Sean Wally, but
Mr. Smith?
Alden Smith. Man, this is something that is really, it concerns me. It concerns me that, you know, this is a young man that's, you know, not one, not two, three, four chances here to make things right. And, you know, this speaks on, and this is one of the things that we should have talked with Coach Wortham about as far as, you know, the, you know, kind of the, like these symposiums. What do you do with the athlete, you know, when they're away from the court or off the field? How do they stay focused if they're injured? How do they stay focused in their rehab? Or how do they stay focused as far as renewing their mind and understanding that there's a task at hand and that I don't want to do anything to hurt my organization or my team or my school? You know, with Alden Smith having all these chances, you would think that he would say, hey, I do not want to jeopardize or mess things up. And, you know, here this video comes out, you know, as far as, you know, it doesn't actually show him inhaling or smoking the marijuana, but why would you put yourself in that position, you know, and knowing that you're on a 9-game suspension already? And so, with that being said, you know, that's a hiccup. Hopefully that's something that doesn't, you know, spill into the camp and cause a deterrence, if you will. But it's just, it's sad. It's sad that, you know, Alden has, you know, gone that route. But hopefully he can, you know, he can right the ship here. But it doesn't look good, man.
What do you think he's trying to portray there? He's acting like it's not him, and somebody in the background is saying, well, why, you know, what are you doing? You can't do this. He's like, oh, nobody knows who I am. It's not me type of thing. Yet, you know, you've got TV channels, TV stations claiming that if you look at all these other interviews and other videos of him, yes, it's the same voice. Whether or not that can be proved or the NFL is going to go that far financially and in depth of trying to figure that out, we'll have to wait and see. But is he just trying to rebel? Is he just trying to show that he's bigger than the man? And you've got his teammates at this point. Yes, they support him, but now they're like, wait a dang minute. We're trying to assist you, help you, get you on the field and make this team better. And now you're pulling these shenanigans.
Well, this is one of the downfalls that I feel the NFL has when it comes to these suspensions and you know, these fines that they put together. And this is probably something that they should talk about in the owners' meetings in the off season. But when you suspend somebody as long as you suspended Alden Smith, I believe it was the last four games of the regular season, and then 9 games going into this season. What that does is when you're suspended, you're not allowed to go to the facilities. You're not allowed to interact with the players, you know, as far as the playbook is concerned. None of that stuff. They leave you hanging out to dry as far as to keep yourself in shape, having the personal trainer and everything. And I think that's a downfall. I think that's something that, you know, I mean, think about it, Sean. 9 games, that is quite a long time, you know, to be away from the coaches, to not know, you know, what the game plan is, the whole 9. And so, you know, I think that's something that the owners have to look at, because it isolates you, it alienates you, and I believe it does it to the point to where you make silly decisions sometimes, if you're not strong enough, you know, to you know, persevere in one of those long suspensions.
Regardless of Aldon Smith and his antics, the Oakland Raiders are looked at as one of the up-and-coming teams for 2016 that very may well surprise some people, of course, that are not within the black hole.
Yeah, you know, the realistic side of me says that, you know, I truly believe the Oakland Raiders will make the playoffs this year. The fan in me says that they will win the AFC West. But I've talked about this before, and I believe I talked about this last week. Don't count out the Super Bowl champions. And I know that they've lost Brock Osweiler, and then they lost Brock Osweiler to the Houston Texans, and then, of course, Peyton Manning going off into the sunset with a Super Bowl win this past year. But that doesn't mean that they don't have a strong defense intact, which they do. That doesn't mean that they don't have the other pieces in place. The Denver Broncos are still a team that I feel is a force to be reckoned with in the AFC West. I don't think that they're going to have a huge drop-off. I think that they're going to compete for that AFC West title. So, you know, we'll see. I believe the Oakland Raiders are up and coming. I do believe that they're a 9 or a possible 10-win team, and I believe that this year they will be the feel-good of the NFL. It just we'll see where they go from there. I mean, are they – you know, a playoff team and they get knocked out in the first round, or can they try to build on more successes in the postseason?
The NFL season starts, the training camp season starts this weekend for every team in the NFL. The Seattle Seahawks, of course, getting things going on the shores of Lake Washington. All 13 practices open to the public, completely sold out. And in fact, the line has begun at CenturyLink for single game tickets. I believe went on sale this morning, which there were only like 1,600 per game. So we know they didn't last long. People camping out overnight, all that good stuff. But news out of the VMAC in Renton, general manager John Schneider locked up to an extension through 2021.
Yeah, and I read that, and that's probably one of the greatest offseason acquisitions that for the Seattle Seahawks. To have GM that is truly responsible for all the talent that Seattle Seahawks have. And through 2021, that is amazing that he has that long contract. I mean, I would lock him up because, you know, he comes from that cloth that we've talked about before, as you had mentioned. Title Town USA, as far as the Green Bay Packers, he comes from that lineage. And so, you know, that was a great, great sign for the Seattle Seahawks.
Now, Sean, everybody's believing that Pete Carroll is next. He will coach here as long as he wants to until he's time and ready to retire. But is as energetic and as young as he feels, even in approaching his mid-60s, nobody thinks he's going to hang it up anytime soon. That being said, the Seahawks moving forward, an interesting note. They have every slated starter on their roster for the 2016 season is signed through the 2017 season. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, you know, and as I was mentioning, that is a part of that Title Town USA moniker as far as putting together and making sure that you solidify your players. Now, when you talk about Schneider, we talk here in Northern California the same with Reggie McKenzie. He's done the same thing. Everybody is locked in for a long period of time. Your strength, your young players, these guys have the same blueprint in mind. Now, I know that Seattle wants to believe that they're original in their thought, but this is a Green Bay model. And so when you look at Green Bay, you look at Seattle, and you look at hopefully in the next couple of years, we'll see the Oakland Raiders. These are teams that should be winning for quite some time under the Snyder regime. And so, I look forward to it. I look forward to, you know, seeing the Oakland Raiders having this winning season, just as you know that the Seattle Seahawks should get back and go. There's talk that, you know, as we were talking with Tony Ventrella last week, of going back to the Super Bowl. And so that is the talk in Seattle. But, yeah, winning needs to be consistent, especially for you and for me with our teams.
if only there were still same division foes, it bites that we have to wait 4 to 6 to 8 years for our two favorite teams to play each other in a meaningful game during the regular season, because we know they play each other every year in the preseason.
Yeah, every year in week 4, when the starters only play a whole series, if playing at all. And so, yeah. But that was the actual game that put Derek Carr on the map a few years ago, as far as, you know, the Raiders saying, hey, we might have something here and we might want to play this guy sooner than later. So there are some good things that come out of that game.
So the check's in the mail. You're welcome. Is that what I'm hearing?
Nah, man. I think that was kind of a payback for giving us Matt Flynn, because, you know, boy, I tell you, you know, between McKenzie and Schneider, you know, these guys talk a lot as far as the players. That's why you have, you know, Raiders becoming Seahawks and Seahawks becoming Raiders. And I think that Seattle got one over on us. So, this Derek Carr thing is just kind of a saying, hey, you know, you're welcome. In that sense, we're even.
Well, from the Seattle Mariner front, oh, my goodness, never mind. My heart was just ripped out and stomped on. Your Oakland A's couldn't seal the deal and maintain the lead with two outs. You had two outs.
Yeah.
And you were winning 6-5, but Sean Boyd, the score is now? Oh.
Well, I believe it was 4-0 at one point, and then Texas State came back.
That's helpful.
And, yeah. You know, I know Seattle has an off day. But they need that to lick their wounds a little bit. They were on a streak for a little bit, and now losers of two in a row. And
They did win the last game. Yesterday, but they won the series in Toronto, winning the first two games. Let's be correct here.
They didn't lose two in a row.
Negative. Not okay. In the last six games, because they won the series with the White Sox 2-1, and then they went to Toronto and beat them the first 2 out of 3 games. So,
okay,
so they won still 4 of 6.
They still have an uphill climb. I believe they're 6.5 games out, possibly 7, if the Oakland A's can't come back. And I believe
it was bottom of the ninth, and somehow the Rangers scored 2. So.
So, yeah, Seattle's closer to the A's than they are the Rangers right now. So, I mean, they're still looking up, and they've got some things to work on. But, yeah, there's still a lot of baseball left, which is what I'm sure you would say next. So, we'll see.
I was here less than a second away from praising your A's.
Don't. Please,
and then
don't.
I see the score change on my app. I'm like, what? It's the bottom of the ninth. You have two outs. You can't get one more out and win the game?
No, you know they're going through a flux right now. And, you know, they can't close out games. They can make them competitive. But there's, you know, young talent. And as we know, the Oakland A's are notorious for trading away players. You know, Rich Hill is, I believe, man, if he's not gone in the next week or so, you know, we can – I know he's going to be gone here pretty soon. The only staples that we have, there's a couple of them. I mean, Coco Crisp, Sonny Gray, you know, are pretty much the only, you know, the only staples that the Oakland A's have. And, you know, they just keep trading players and getting rid of them and going to their farm club. And it's just a bad year for them. You know, I'm crossing my fingers for them to win games as well, but once they lose, I'm not surprised. So, you know, sorry they couldn't pull it out for the M's there.
It's all right. Half a game. Not a life or death sentence either way. As you noted, the Mariners 6.5 out behind Texas, but only 5 in the wild card. So,
yeah, you know, when you look at that wild card, though, as you mentioned, it's not as simple as just being 5 games out. There's a little more to it than that. And, you know, what I mean is there are teams in between. And when you look at that wild card spot and you look at where the Mariners are at, I mean, you said the Mariners are 5 games out from the wild card spot, but there's Boston, Toronto, Houston, Detroit, and the Yankees that stand in front of them. So they have a little bit of work to do, no doubt about it, but it's not as easy as what you're saying. And so, you know, just as the Mariners are kind of warming up and finding a few wins here and there, so can these other 5 teams that are in front of them.
I can't correct you because you might be right, you might be wrong. Baseball season ebbs and flows, as you said. The A's are in flux. Other teams go in flux. The Rangers have been in flux as of late. They haven't had a winning record in the past week and a half. So we'll see. You know, as you said, there's a lot of baseball left, and we'll see how it all irons out. The Mariners oddly have not one but 2 days off this week, which is unheard of in a baseball season. If you combine it with the day off they had on Thursday to travel all the way east to Toronto, that's 3 days off in a span of 7, 8, 9 days, which is remarkable in a matter of 162-game marathon. So we'll see if that helps them get right, get guys back from injury, like a Felix Hernandez, who did pitch this past week and did okay. The Mariners ended up winning that game against the White Sox. And, you know, it's better to go with Felix than not. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, there's a little bit of baseball to go, seeing what if Felix can actually find some of that magic of old, because they're going to need it. The pitching, you know, pitching has to be more solid than it has been. And so, you know, they have a little bit of the season for the bats to wake up. I know that, you know, the game before that, as you had mentioned, they won. I believe they went on an onslaught with 14 runs, and I forgot about that game, but then
it was the Seahawks against the Bills, I think.
And then last night there were 0 runs. And so, you know, that's kind of a microcosm of their season, and there's going to have to be a little more consistency if they want to get that wild card spot.
Well, Sean, this upcoming weekend, of course, the Mercury rising, it is hot, summer upon us. The last weekend in July, always the Columbia Cup in Tri-Cities, Washington, the unlimited hydroplanes embarking on the Columbia River. And I will be there not one, not two, but 3 straight days running the switcher for KNDU-TV and SWX, helping put the hydros on television in Eastern Washington.
Well, at least you'll be around some water, and I don't know what the weather will be like up, goodness, for Seafair. I don't know if you're getting a chance to do that, but I know the Columbia Cup, as you're mentioning, it's normally a warm, warm climate. For me, I am going to be at Sac State for the rest of the week. The Junior Olympics are in town, and you talk about a big, big event. 6,500 athletes, and you multiply them by the 2 parents. Oh, my goodness. Hornet Stadium is going to be packed. 20,000 is what it seats, and it'll be packed. And there's no cover, Sean Wally. Meaning there's no cover from the heat. And for the rest of this week, we're looking at 106 degrees, 107, 104, 103. And I believe by the end of the week, it'll be in the low 100s. But it's going to be hot, my friend. And I will be scouting out a lot of the talent and, you know, supporting 1911 Track Club out of the 253 and looking to expand down here in the 916.
Great work being done all up and down the West Coast, all over the map by 1911 Track Club, originating out of the 253.
Man, and then these kids, there's going to be about 25 kids from the 1911 Track Club, and so, you know, there's some great things that are happening, and, you know, making sure that you're supporting the community and uplifting the community and doing some great things, and that's what we're trying to do with the 1911 Track Club.
Well, Sean, you mentioned the weather. And for the Columbia Cup on the Columbia River in Tri-Cities, Friday, the worst of the 3 days, 102. Saturday, not really any different, 99. Sunday, we get a reprieve at 88 degrees.
Well, man, make sure that these those hydroplanes are kicking their rooster tail over your way so that you can stay cool, man, because that sounds like it's going to be a burner.
Well, Sean, it's been an excitingly fun show. Two great guests tonight here on The Double.
Definitely. And, of course, our guest number one, we had Miss J on, and a professional basketball player extraordinaire and a coworker of ours. So happy to have her here on The Double. And guest number two, Coach Rashi Wortham of the University of Montana, assistant basketball coach. Both doing some awesome things, motivational speaking, and, you know, being a light and sharing their prowesses, you know, in the community and creating some strong athletes as well. Man, it's been a great show, Sean Wally, as always.
That's exactly what we try and do here on The Double. Two big-time guests, as you mentioned. Big-time thank you to Joyce Ekweremadu and assistant basketball coach Rashi Wortham out of the University of Montana, hailing from the Tacoma area, 253.
Yes, have to give that shout out to the 253 all the time, man. And as we always say here on The Double, Sean Wally, man, it's been a great one. Make sure that you're staying out of the heat, my friend, because I am going to do the same. You're not in the game unless you take a shot. And when you take that shot, we hope that it hits nothing but the bottom of the net. For Mr. Sean Wally up in the Pacific Northwest, Eastern Washington, yours truly here in the EG Studios in Northern California, Doug Newsom, our engineer in Paradise, California. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests on The Double with the Double S Express.